Welcome, Queen, to the Body Love Binge with me, Victoria. Although we're all unique, honestly, I'm no different to you. I'm just a girl who's been through some hard shit, figured out how to thrive, and made it her life's mission to help others to do the same. I've beaten anorexia, bulimia, binge eating disorder, and I'm a domestic abuse survivor. My intention for this podcast is to empower you with weekly episodes on all things food freedom, body love, and of course, juicy, yummy self-love, so you can embody the healthiest and happiest version of you. Enjoy the episode, my love. Hello, queens. Welcome to another episode. I have a very special guest with me today. And in all honesty, I've been sitting here for far too long now trying to sum up this episode in words to at least give you queens some idea as what to expect and why to listen. But honestly, I'm finding it really difficult to do, so I'm just not going to do it. All I'm going to say is, if you're interested in uncovering the absolute root cause of any of your health conditions, then you will get so much out of this episode. And I don't just mean chronic health conditions, I just mean how you feel day to day. Paris is so full of wisdom, it's insane. And as you'll be able to tell as you listen to this episode, I was having a whale of a time really and asking questions that I really wanted to know the answer to, because I learned a ton in this, I was going to say in this session, in this conversation. So I hope that you do too. Sending you all so much love and enjoy the episode. Paris, I've just said to my list to Paris listeners, hi beauties, by the way, we needed to press record because already there was like nuggets of wisdom all over the place. So Paris, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Vic. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. And I don't know if you've listened to previous guest episodes before, but I give you 10 quick fire questions that you don't know what they're going to be, like straight off the bat.
Shoot. So, this is a good reminder that I need to study more before these things.
Oh, no, you wait till you hear the kind of questions. They're not like study type questions. Okay. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. So let me get them so I can actually see your beautiful face. There we go. They're in the middle now. Okay. Number one, do you have a spirit animal? And if so, what is it?
Oh, great question. I have a couple, and one of them recently came to me too. And it is an orca, killer whale, which is like very matriarch energy and like family and protection. So that's one of them. And then the winged creatures follow me, like eagles and falcons, and any of those. And bison have always been one of mine, which is another like deep feminine wisdom of that like stability, just really that sounds way more masculine in how I'm describing it, but I always associate the bison with like a deep mothering type of energy. They're so beautiful.
That's beautiful. All right. Finish this sentence on number two. Self-love is?
Self-love is deep truth.
Amen. What's your favorite food?
Oh, boy. I love raw oysters. That's probably one. Oh, and I've really gotten back into like, it's easier to just call it like roe, like fish eggs, but any kind of caviar is so damn good. Like, I really love it.
I'm pulling a face, anyone listening. I've tried it before. It's not for me, but that's interesting. Like, everyone's different. It's beautiful.
It is.
All right. Number four, do you have a quote or a mantra that you like to live by?
How you do one thing is how you do everything.
Yeah, agree with that. Okay. Number five, what book do you recommend everyone in the world should read?
Oh, wow. There's a couple. This is so challenging. But the one that's actually immediately next to me that I would really encourage people to read is called Melanin is the Name, but Copper is the Source of All Pigmentation in Life.
Oh, That's interesting. I'm sure we're going to dive into that.
Oh, we will. It's by a gentleman, I'm assuming, named Darius Clay. And then I would also recommend Morley Robbins' book, Cure Your Fatigue.
Oh, I've not heard of that one. I've not heard of either of those.
They're both great ones.
Thank you for sharing. Okay, what are three things you love about yourself?
This is such a good question. I love my constant curiosity, my devotion to being a student of myself and this existence, and I love my ability to evolve in this life.
Hell yes, sister. Thank you. Easy one. Dogs or cats?
Dogs.
And finish this sentence. Healing is?
Healing is the spiritual path.
I agree. Favorite part of your day, if you have a favorite part?
Oh boy. It would definitely be, well, I have a couple of them. It depends. Is Grayson with me or not? And for anyone listening, that's my 9-year-old son. But the favorite part of my day is the first thing in the morning, getting my feet on the grass and soaking up the morning sun. And just that reminder of like, I'm here again for another day.
Yes. Feel that. Last question.
And then my other favorite part though is like whenever I get to have Grayson and being with him.
I'm not like home, but I can imagine. Beautiful. Last question. I reached out to you. I mean, we know each other anyway, right? We're soul sisters. However, I asked you to be on my podcast and I'm grateful that you are here, but why did you want to come on and share your message?
When we were brought together, there was a deeper like frequency of remembrance between us. And I adore you. And it's been so long since we've been able to chat. And I was really excited because I so deeply appreciate the work that you do in the world. Because as we know, and we will get into, I had a background of, I danced with bulimia for 16 years of my life. And, you know, these conversations to me are so rich and necessary in this world, because at least in my particular field that I exist in, it doesn't yet feel like these are talked about quite enough. Like in so many individuals exist in some sort of distorted relationship with their body and with food, and it's really reflective of so much that's happening in the collective. And anyways, I was just really, really excited for the opportunity to chat.
I am. I'm so grateful for you, Paris. And just off the back of what you've said, it's so interesting that I've had a consultation today with a beautiful client. Well, she's now a client. And she said, just simply sharing what was true for her and what she was experiencing right now and struggling with feels like a huge weight has been lifted, because as you've said, people aren't really talking about this. There's so much shame that is held around this because of the conditioning we've had, and then we feel like there's something wrong with us. But just sharing alone can create some healing.
Yeah, completely. And I think part of the misconception of like these conversations not happening quite enough is we don't fully see the way that that little shame, like molecule in our system or in our subconscious, is impacting all areas of our life.
Yeah.
And that freedom that exists in that space of being able to open to truth and like what is real and alive gives us the opportunity to actually be in relationship with life.
Mm, yes. I'm going to say amen. Like, I feel like I want to say amen to every, and like my to like everything that you say. So from this moment on, I'm just going to do like a mic drop symbol when I'm like,
hey, perfect.
All right, Paris, can you share with the listeners a bit about your background? I know you've been through so much, but like, yeah.
How much like, time do we have?
Yeah, because like, I have so many juicy questions for you as well. So obviously, long story short, and I'm going to be diving into your story as we go through anyway. How did you end up being the woman that you are today, who is ever evolving always?
Well, clearly, I guess I signed some soul contracts while I was floating around in the cosmic soup, which I still really, really like proof that I even signed because I feel like my signature was forged.
That's hilarious. Because you were like, what the fuck did I choose this? Really?
Oh my goodness. As life continues on, I'm constantly like, really? Did I chose this? you gotta be kidding me. Let me think of a way to try to like really summarize this quick in some sort of fashion that at least also holds reverence to it. But I, you know, I was born into a family in the Bay Area of California. And there's a lot of people that study also like internal family systems. And so there's a lot to say about even that. But I'm number three of four kids. And there is a 8-year like gap between my oldest sister and I, and during which period of time my mom experienced three miscarriages. And so it creates an interesting dynamic within a family unit. And then I have a younger sister as well. That when you are brought up in that type of family, like you're always, at least the way that I existed in it, is like you're always trying to find your way to be seen ever. And for me, the way that that happened, that I gained recognition was through cooking for my dad. Like I started, like my grandmother and I, who was my best friend, and I would cook together always when I was young. And she transitioned when I was in first grade. So in second grade, it was the summer going into second grade, I think it was, that I really started cooking. I started watching like cooking shows and everything. And then that was a way that my father and I connected, was through the love that was created through food. Mm-hmm. And it was something that I was consistently praised for in my family too, like because I existed with individuals who were what quote unquote picky eaters. And I wasn't a picky eater. So it was always like, you're such a good eater. Mm-hmm. And that type of thing starts to really get embedded into your mind. I also grew up in a family. I was quite literally raised on the football field, as you guys would say.
Yeah. You said soccer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Football.
My dad was a soccer coach. He coached my older sister. And so he would like coach on the sidelines with my younger sister and I on both like hips. And while he was coaching, like we were quite literally engrossed in athletics our entire life. And then I started doing road races, like running pre-kindergarten. So yeah.
Well, was that okay for your joints? Like, is that okay or?
Well, we could get there eventually, but I like to say that I sold, well, over here in the United States, our collegiate organization that rules all athletics is called the NCAA. And I often say I sold my soul to the NCAA, but this is also something that like we can get into. And so your listeners know that the world that I currently exist in is in minerals, and understanding the interplay of iron and oxygen and what ends up happening to an individual who starts competing at that young of an age. Like it makes complete sense why I fell back on survival patternings, such as bulimia or, you know, any of these things to try to keep myself safe, because I was constantly in a state of like, of fight or flight. Because your body can't tell the difference. Your nervous system can't tell the difference of you going out for a run or some bear chasing you, you know, like that being stuck in that cortisol and adrenaline state.
So that's where I guess overtraining can come into play. Like a lot of women listen to this are into fitness, and I used to overtrain all the time. We think it's a quote good thing, get as much exercise as possible, but it's not.
Oh gosh. And we'll, there's so much.
Yeah, there is.
Especially because, man, when I was in college, I was working out at certain points of time, like 9 times a day. Like, oh, it was crazy. That's what was paying for my school. But when we get stuck in that state, and it's, you know, I've always taken things to extremes. Like I've always been a pendulum swinger, obviously, bench and purge. Bench. That when I, it's easy to latch on to things that are quote unquote good for you without understanding that where we need to exist in true equilibrium is in that middle space of harmony. Mm-hmm. And so at one, like when you and I met, I think around that time I was working out like 3 times a day, still thinking that I wasn't, that I was healed from the eating disorder.
You used to get up at like 3 in the morning or something. Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, that I was doing Kundalini yoga too, which is really good for you, but I was stuck in a lot of avoidance patterns still. But anyways, to backtrack where we were, that athletics piece of my life also helped shape and form a lot of how I then related within my family unit. And, when I was in high school was when it was 8th grade was when I finally started my period, like having a menstrual cycle. It was like,
how
either
old is that? Sorry. What's 8th grade? Like, how old are you then roughly?
Gosh, like 13, okay. And then it like disappeared for a while and then came back my freshman year of high school. So grade 9, I was roughly like 14 years old around then. And, around that time is when all of my hormones started to really shift. And the way that we also manifest our deepest wounding, this comes from the work of a woman named Lise Barbeau, who wrote a book called Heal Your Wounds, Find Your True Self, is a lot of my deep wounding is with my father. And so I carry the wound of betrayal, and there's a mask that you wear called, which is the mask of control. So like I became a very sturdy individual because what I was trying to exude to the external was like, I can take care of myself. I've got this type of thing. However, when you are a long distance runner, what you are really told is that you need to be as thin as possible, as lean as possible, so you can be light and quick. Mm-hmm. And my dad was also one of my coaches. So I was like continually, offered what he felt was encouragement, but like in a adolescent, like female, the way that I heard and received any of that was like, you are fat, you are slow. If you have any hope of running faster, like you better drop some weight. And so around that time, one of my best friends in high school, it felt as though that she was on the other end of the spectrum of like anorexia. And I started, the internet can be a really wonderful thing, and it can also be an incredibly dangerous thing. And at that point in time, what was really popular was all of these, like they referred to as pro Mia and pro Anna, like websites that existed. And I started researching a bunch of this, trying to help her, and then ended up sucking myself into it all.
Yeah.
Because again, going back to like the things that I had been praised for in my familial unit and the things that I loved food. I loved that outward expression of love of creating dish. It was such an artistic form to me too. And like, because I'm a person that lives in such an artistic world myself, that, it felt like the only option that I really had was to try down that path. And so I at first tried to start starving myself, and it didn't work at all because I loved food too much. And then it like pendulum swung then to bulimia. And so it was in my sophomore year of high school that I started dancing around with it. And it was a little bit challenging and tricky to try to consistently do. And so when what all of us kids had received from my parents was that we were told that we needed to go to college. However, if we wanted to go to college, what we needed to do, if we wanted to go away to school, like out of the Bay Area, that it had to be on a full ride scholarship, either academic or athletic. And they wouldn't even pay for any of our, our approval letters, like the things that you send off to see if you're going to be approved, even into accepted into one of the colleges. And so I was never a great student per se, because I really loved the social aspect of school. Like I was smart and I could get by, but I didn't love doing homework, which was always a challenge, which is a really interesting pattern when we look at bulimia, because like I spent so much of my life not digesting things.
Oh, yeah.
And so I literally struggled to digest anything in life.
So it was like you could consume, but then it wouldn't do it. It would be consume and then like let go of it, or get rid of it kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm starting to really acknowledge that pattern too, like where it's like, oh, wow, that relationship wasn't just with food. It's with so much of life, of like my inability to hold sensation of anything.
Wow. Like what you said in your favorite quote, like how you do one thing is how you do everything.
I do everything.
Yeah, it's so true. I'm reflecting also, like, yeah, wow, continue. It's amazing. It's,
yeah, I will. And you know a lot about like some of my money stuff also, like my relationship with money and relationship with the masculine in general. Like so much of that is so reflective of that bulimic patterning, where the inability to digest and integrate like into life that allows you to then expand. So you just, you're going from contraction to like force, contraction to force, and rather than like really being able to like open yourself up.
Wow. And receive the nourishment from food, yes, from learning, from, wow. So interesting, isn't it?
It's a deep one.
I love deep. Yeah. Go deep or go deeper. That's how conversations I like.
yes. But so when that was what I was offered from my parents, like the only ticket that I truly saw out was through athletics. But my junior year of high school, I ended up injured. I had what's referred to as compartmental syndrome. It's like carpal tunnel, but in your calf, it's in your legs. And so I had a fasciotomy where they literally go in and they cut the fascia to release it. This is like, also, nobody, what's so fascinating about this to me is that your fascial unit around your body, like tells you so much about the health of an individual, that it was like so stuck. I was so rigid and contracted in life that like my fascia literally wouldn't expand.
If that isn't a message, I don't know what is, right?
Oh my goodness. It not only message and a reflection, like it's like so amazing to start to piece these things together. but that injury that I was told would only be like a 6-week recovery was like a year. And at that point in time, like I knew that my only hope was to how I've told the story many times is like suck it up and go to the junior college for a couple years and work my butt off, which I did quite literally, because as soon as I graduated from high school, it was a really destabilizing time for me, going back to that idea of like integration and absorption of the nourishment had always been a challenging piece, which meant that truly letting go was always a challenging piece for me. And so graduating high school, I took really hard because like, these are people that I had known my entire life, essentially, who were now going away and I was stuck back at home. And it like opened up the gateway of a lot for me. It opened up my need for control because I felt so out of control at that point in time. And that's when the bulimia really kicked in. And so I quite literally whittled myself down and started competing. I was number four in the state and in track that year. And like, I started to have schools talking to me. But anyways, to speed up through some of that, like the next 10 years, I guess what unfolded was still like a really seriously like distorted relationship with my body, with my own personal power, with my relationship to food. And I experienced so much dis-ease and illness during that period of time too, because clearly like my cellular makeup wasn't receiving anything that it really needed. I had a miscarriage, and the reflection of all of the relationships in my life were true reflections of my relationship with my body. Mm-hmm. Like it was just absolute chaos. I was in multiple physically abusive relationships, multiple like verbally, emotionally, mentally abusive relationships. And I always tell the story is like, they were all reflections of the relationship with myself.
Yeah. Everything's a reflection, isn't it?
It is. As above, so below.
As within, so without. I remember when I first heard, like when I first started my personal development journey, which that led me down the route of my spiritual development, I remember hearing like time and time again in the books that I was consuming and from my coaches, like everything's a mirror. And I was like, I didn't get it. Like my intellect was like, I do not understand how that is true. And it's honestly 5 years on, I would say it's only been in the last year where I've really, quote, got it, where every cell of my being is like, yeah, everything is a reflection inviting you to take a look within yourself to heal what comes up or not, because we have free will on this universe, right? But it's not going to go away.
Exactly. I mean, that's the deep medicine of this existence. And there's always, to me, like the feminine dances in the space of nuance. There's always like a yes and, like everything is a reflection up into the point that it's somebody else's part to take responsibility for, because as an individual, like I've always overly taken responsibility.
Yeah,
like especially because so to shift some of this story, right before my 30th birthday is when I finally started to get really tired of my shit. Like I was really tired of existing this way. Like, when I was 26 years old, I was told that I had endometriosis so bad that I might not ever be able to conceive. And then a couple months later, sorry, I was 25. And then when I would turn 26 is when I ended up having Grayson, but I was told that I might not ever be able to conceive. And like a couple months later, of course, in the way that the universe so divinely provides these growth opportunities, I ended up pregnant with my now son, Grayson. And over the next 4 years, what I started to see was, it was really crazy, Vic, like he would like mimic puking, but I know that he was never witnessing me puke. And it was like really crazy to be like, oh my God, that right before my 30th birthday, I was like, Grayson deserves a mom who's fully present. And Grayson, like, I didn't want him growing up in that kind of environment too. And I was also just finally ready to be done with my own crap. Like during when I ended up receiving the scholarship to the University of Southern Mississippi, our head trainer had tried to get me help because I had lost so much weight one year between the summer and the start of the season in the fall that he looked at me and jokingly had said, like, you know, you're getting quite thin. If you don't start putting on some weight, we might not let you run. And I broke down in tears. And he was like, oh shit, there's actually something more here. But I wasn't ready at that point in time. Like, this is a big part of the healing path. And I've had many people try to be like, oh, can you help my brother, my partner, my like whomever it is. And it's like, no, I really can't. Like, that's a hard pill to take, but until the person's like truly ready to start looking inward, there's nothing we can really do.
That's so true. And I have a few women reach out to me that their like daughter or their niece are struggling with bulimia or anorexia specifically. And knowing that I've been through both, they reach out to me and I say the same as you. I say, all you can do is hold the space, let them invite them, you know, to talk if that feels right for them. Know that you're there for them, but they have to go through their own experience. When I was anorexic, I didn't want to get better for ages. Like, my mom forced me to psychotherapist and I would sit there with my arms folded, literally like hating every second. And it wasn't until things started to shift within me. And like, God knows what that was like and how and why. And I am where I am now because of that experience. It wasn't until I wanted to get help. Therefore, I then started my healing process. And, you know, it's so hard as an onlooker with someone you care about and love so much going through that and thinking there's nothing you can do. You can be there for them, but that is their own experience. So you're so right. Whenever you're ready,
yeah,
there's no other time than that, I'm afraid.
Yeah. And I think the other part in that that becomes the deeper form of medicine that is available to us that we're invited into is it's where are some of these patterns a reflection in yourself?
Yeah. It's never about the food, is it? It's never.
Well, that too, but like even just as an outside individual, like looking in on somebody that appears to have the quote unquote problem. Cause like what, so when I turned 30, right before I turned 30, I actually went on a date with an individual who is what the Western world would diagnose as he had Asperger's. Like he was fell somewhere on the spectrum, which is like one of the most, in my mind, beautiful gifts somebody can be given, because I'm a Pisces and all I ever do is feel, which is I was running away from ever feeling anything that I was feeling. But there is a disassociation to like social norms, as well as like, they tend to just be very blunt. And I was at this point in time, really addicted to my self-victimization and the things that were happening in my life. And he was the first person who dead on like looked at me and said, stop victimizing yourself. If you want your life to be different, you can change everything in a year. And I was like, oh.
Oh shit.
And then he followed that up by handing me my first personal development book. And it was a book by a gentleman named Steve Chandler, I believe.
Oh yes, and heard of him.
It's a book called The Story of You, I think was the first one that he had gifted me. And then he also gave me Mark Manson's
The Subtle Art of Giving a Fuck.
Yeah. 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 So good. And that was my entry point into like self-awareness and like starting to kind of have some ownership. And then from there, like it was shared with me a book called like, Will I Ever Be Good Enough? Healing the Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers. And that then at that point in time just really started to shift a lot, like where I was like, oh my goodness, like I get some of this, but it caused a lot of like rage in me too, which is part of this entire like process of starting to be like, wait, I've put up with what this entire
time? And I had a choice the whole time. What? Right. Would have thought we have a choice like ever. Well, that's the whole point in life.
Yeah, which again is goes back to the beginning. I still want to know if I made a choice to come here.
Of course you did. You know that. Because look at, I mean, just look at what you've done and what you have continued to do. And
oh gosh.
And the amount of like influence you're having on people. You have the key for so many others' pain and freedom.
Isn't that such a beautiful thing?
It's such a gift. It's such a gift. And it's took me a while also to get to the stage where even when my ego's like, why the fuck is this happening right now? My soul is overpowering that with love. Like, thank you for this gift. And I can really feel and distinguish between the two. And always when I feel the love and the quiet, strong, inner knowing peace part of me, that feels, and I just know it's the truth. The other part of me is the human part of me. And I've learned to love that too, because we chose to be on a human journey. So let's also embrace and love the human part of us that is always going to be a battle, only if we choose to see it as a battle, right? Whatever we perceive is our reality. And it takes a while. Well, it doesn't have to take a while. It doesn't take time. It takes alignment, right? But it took me a while to get into alignment with like who I am, what is my part in this world, stop blaming people, take responsibility. But you have to be ready. You can't force of it.
Yeah, slow is the best speed. That's another one of my like favorite mantras is slow. Because and this I think is, I'm reminded of this constantly. I was offered this from a dear friend of mine, Nisia Nelson, who reminded me about the beauty that exists in a female body, especially that when, because of the, we're created to gestate life, you know, and how we create with the world isn't just through the creation of human, it's also the creation of art, it's the creation of any kind of expression, it's our like deeper like knowing, like and gnosis, and they're what we are gifted in that opportunity is the ability to really allow something to maturate inside of our system before needing to like spew it out into the world.
Yeah,
because like when we create human life, it takes 10 months to do that.
Yeah, that's so true.
And again, this goes back to that relationship with digestion and integration. How long can you hold this sensation? Like that's where we dance with the turn on with the universe, right? Because like all power is created through that sexual like power. And like how much can you dance on that edge of polarity? How far can you take that edge and really dance there?
Yeah. I've increased my capacity to receive, and then not only to receive, to hold that pleasure, because I would be like, I desire this and I desire that and I would love that. And then it's like, when it comes to me, I'm like, oh, my nervous system can't take this much happiness and pleasure. Let me just give it back. And then also then complain that I've not got it. When I said I want it, then I received it, then I couldn't handle it, then I had to give it away. So
right. Let's look at, this is the bulimic pattern, the life bulimic.
Yes. Wow.
Give me, I want this. Now I'm going to reject it.
Yes. Because I can't, like I say, I want it. And then I can't deal with the feeling. Even the, it sounds fucked up, but the immense pleasure, for example, if you really want, like the amount of times I've almost fucked up mine and Wouter's relationship at the beginning, because it was everything I ever desired. And I was like, whoa, no. I can't hold this much pleasure and this much communication, this much vulnerability. I'm just going to like create something to try and leave. He wouldn't let me leave because he held so much love. I didn't physically leave and he wouldn't let me. I meant in terms of how we danced as a couple.
Totally. Well, that's the masculine frame, right?
Yeah.
He holds the provision and protection so that we can kick and scream.
Do our feminine thing. Exactly.
So we can kick and scream into that space of opening. Yeah. Like that's what we are offered as an invitation. And I think that that's such a beautiful reflection that you're providing, like in that, and that to be offered as well, because that is the feminine path, yeah. Learning how to be penetrated by the masculine in that way, which is us being penetrated by life.
Yeah. Without trying to run away. I used to run away. If it gets hard, just leave. That's what you do. That's what everyone's taught me in my life, especially in relationship, just leave. But then you actually don't develop, you don't communicate. And, you know, we know how the story ends. And I was creating that pattern in my life. And it wasn't until I was faced with everything I'd ever wanted. And thankfully I was in personal and spiritual development at the time, else I wouldn't have been aware of like what the fuck I was actually doing.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a beautiful, like beautiful lesson within all of this, like that. And again, going back to like, there's always a yes and in there. Like this isn't a justification for staying in like true abusive relationships. No. This is that space of like, when we really are offered the opportunity to look deeply inward into like what it is that we are in avoidance of, and that where we are being victimized by our own pattern. Because everything that you're sharing, like the way that I ever had sex, like until very recently, was in that same way of like, I was so afraid to let myself ever go into having an orgasm that I would push everything away, try to rush through it, try to power through it, try to force through it in a way to reject my own pleasure and somebody else wanting to
give that to you.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, I love these conversations. There's so many layers to all of it, isn't there?
Oh gosh, it's never ending. Like that's what it feels like. And that's the thing that I'm continually like anchored into more and more, is just how deep this well is and how transformative it is. And like also how much we can avoid it and create so much more pain and suffering.
Oh, but our story loves the suffering and pain. Even though we say we don't want it, unconsciously we love it because it's our comfort zone.
Yeah, the existential kink.
I've read that. Have you read that? Oh my gosh, having is evidence of wanting. Listeners, if you want to be triggered as fuck and you're ready to be seriously open to all of your own bullshit, listen to or read that book, Existential Kink. What's the author? I can't think of her name.
Carolyn Elliott.
Yeah. So definitely check that book out, but just pre-warn you. You have to go into it with like an open mind and an open heart and just know that you may be triggered throughout.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I trust that those who are really ready to hear it will be able to hear it in the way that it's desired to be presented. And at the same time, like, I think if something pops up in someone's awareness, there's some sort of deeper lesson there, even in the triggering.
especially in the trigger. 100%. That's like, again, a gift. Like, hey, why is this triggering me right now? Let me take a look. Or not. It's up to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how much you want to grow and how much peace and love you want to feel and receive in your life. It's up to you.
Yeah.
So how did you get from... Obviously, your story now, you've started to find personal...
We're now in my 30s. Like
how old are you now, by the way?
I'm 35.
35, same as me, 87.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
But the last 5 years have been... I still don't have an exact word for them. Like the trajectory of growth and development that I... put myself into has been deeply transformative. But what ended up happening soon after I turned 30 and I started walking down that path is that you are offered the opportunity to start really cleaning up your life.
Yeah.
And it is a slow unwinding process that could have only ever been played out in the way that it did. And I held like a badge of honor that I started healing from my eating disorder on my own, which anybody that's ever been down this path knows is the biggest sign of danger. I mean, it was really beautiful in the way that it happened. Like, I found tennis, early into that journey and ended up starting to play tennis. And, it was really transformative for me because it was finally a place where I could be a beginner and I could be imperfect and mm-hmm. I could learn how to experiment and grow. And it was okay.
How was it okay? Because my question to you is like, how did you go from the high achiever, like always being the best and going all in, to being okay with being a beginner?
I think it was because I was holding so much perfectionism everywhere else in my life that like I had an outlet somehow that I was like, no, you haven't played this before. It's okay. Like, are you athletic? Yes. Are you good? Yes. But can you keep learning? Like, yeah, of course. And I also, in the beautiful way that the universe works, I found this man who is the kookiest man on the planet. And he was like the most perfect coach for me. And he, at the beginning of every practice, he would walk up and he would put his finger right on my third eye. And he would say, turn that thing off.
Wow.
And so I was invited into this space of learning how to get out of my own way. Mm-hmm. And perfectly what lined up within that the first couple months into the healing journey of bulimia was I tore my soleus, which is in your calf. Like it's the deeper calf muscle. Like your calf is your gastrocnemius. And then underneath that is your soleus. And I popped it.
and calf, like, have you found the link between you and the calf? Is it rooted? Is it grounded?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh gosh. Yes. Well, so I'm trying to think of how to explain all of this because this has come up again recently because I tweaked my Achilles tendon, so right under my calf, and recently. And so I tore my subscapularis, so right under my shoulder blade when I was a kid, overthrowing a ball. And it's created so much like scar tissuing that like my hips are also off. I'm a little bit wonky, but you see this a lot through, I don't know what PRI stands for, but it's a form of chiropractic. And the way that they see everyone's bodies is that they're very asymmetrical. So they're not symmetrical. And a lot of people exist in this world with two right feet. And what we know, like, I know the binary can be really challenging for people to like, relate to, but like from a spiritual level, like not in the same way that we know masculine and feminine in the gender form, but the right side of our body is related to the masculine. That's our place of doing and going and being and like,
I wonder if that's why most people are right-handed, just out of interest. Most people.
I don't doubt it. And then the left side of the body is the feminine. That's our side of receiving.
Where the heart is on the left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just wait. It gets more.
Okay, I'll stop interrupting. I'm like a child. Okay.
So most people walk around with two right feet. This is indicative of that very masculine energy that we exist in the world. Super linear, achievement-based, goal-oriented, like just always powering forward. Mm-hmm. And Let's see. So there's a couple of things here. The calf is our biggest pump of to pump our blood up back to our heart. And if we have a block in our pelvis, it's going to block all of that from being able to like go upward. So going back to like my relationship with my own personal power and sexual power and sexuality, like so much of that was blocked and stored also because like I never felt safe inside of my body. Like, you know, slowly unwinding this both to my relationship with athletics and my relationships with my body, like I never felt safe because I also didn't feel the way I experienced my family, like I didn't feel safe in that unit too. That, you know, we look at Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that root, your root chakra is your place of stability. And it was like, my hips quite literally are off because of this whole like overthrowing. So I existed in this place of like muscling through life. That's another thing too. So it's like how you walk, like I walked muscling through life, like overusing my calves rather than learning how to like properly biomechanically like move slowly through life.
Like, and flow, more like the feminine flows.
Yep. So I was always like rejecting that feminine, which like, you know, there's so many layers here, which is exactly how I existed like with my menstrual cycle and of like, you know, rejecting that and the way that that ended up showing up too in my life. But what's interesting specifically for what I've been recently experiencing is the calf from the German New Medicine standpoint is related to a conflict of self-devaluation originating in the middle of the back. And in the middle of your back is where you have your kidneys, which from the traditional Chinese medicine standpoint is the pathology of fear. But they also generate all of our energy too. So if you're just running off of fear because you feel like nobody has your back, but really what it is that you don't have your own back and you don't value yourself. And when we look at value, it's so connected to the feminine side. And like one of my friends, Victor, who is a PRI chiropractor, and I were talking about this, and he said what it also is like you're planting, you're taking off from the ground too quickly, like you're moving forward too quickly,
which is story of your life.
Right.
That's so funny. Isn't it
interesting? Yes. So this is like, there's so much there and so much like our bodies are such beautiful roadmaps for everything that's happening. And like, as I've been playing my own personal story back and like unwinding this gunk, the cellular gunk that I've carried for so long, been really offered the opportunity to continue to find that harmony and equilibrium within my system. Cause like I had shared, I had endometriosis so bad that I was told that I may never be able to conceive. And to me, endometriosis holds this frequency of lack of boundaries. And I didn't know a damn boundary if it would have hit me in the face. And anytime that it actually did, it was really triggering for me. And so I've, you know, helped heal that relationship with estrogen within my own internal system, because how that also happens is estrogen and iron, estrogen tries to jump in and chaperone iron around when we don't have enough copper. And the way that I like to view all of these minerals, which are our literal building blocks of life, they are the spark plugs of life, is through the personification of them, because they do hold a resonance and frequency. My mentor and teacher, Morley Robbins, has shared that minerals are sentient beings. Like, they are literally coloring how we view the world. Specifically, copper is coloring how we view the world, because copper is responsible for all color that we see. It sorry, so I'm like choking.
Wow. So copper, I mean, I'm sure you're going to let us know where we can get more of that, but continue. So in terms of like the colors we see.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole, like the title of this book right here, melanin is the name, but copper is the source of all pigmentation in life. Like, copper is what creates the melanin enzyme.
Wow. And that's coloring, isn't it? In your skin,
in your hair, you know, way more in else. Your eyes, in everything.
Wow. And so how is, if you had to give a percentage, if you know, of the general world's population, how much percent of us in general are deficient in copper? Do you know? is it a joke? They're like 99%.
I wouldn't even say like 99.9%. Because we've stripped all of the minerals from the soils.
Yeah.
We've been adding inorganic iron filings to the food, like specifically here in America, they've been added since the 1940s. And then that amount was up in the 1970s. And iron holds the frequency of fear. You know, if you're looking at the periodic table,
wow,
iron is Fe.
Oh my God. That's insane. But surely how come it's the frequency of fear when we do need it, right?
Oh, this is such a good question, Vic. Such a good question.
I want to know, not my listeners. I do.
And this is the part that I've been like really dancing in this space of, like, everything is a divine union. What we're seeking in life is a divine union. And it's really easy to try to demonize things. We do this with food. We do this with like anything in the human experience. But I've always hated that, like, only because I just, again, going back to Paris running pendulum swing extremes, you know, that whole saying that you hear often is like everything in moderation. Like,
yeah.
But there's actually truth in there. Like, it's actually more that everything has a role and everything has to play a part. And when we start to understand what those things are and how they exist, then we can start to like really respect it all. And so iron isn't just the frequency of fear, it's also the frequency of strength. And from an alchemical standpoint, iron is connected with Mars, which is the red planet.
Is that masculine?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And think about what happens in the world as we demonize patriarchy all the time. There's this rejection of things is like what we've been doing a lot. But like, and then copper is connected to Venus, which is the planet of, yeah, it's the feminine, it's the planet of love. So to me, copper holds the frequency. Morally, Robbins often refers to it as God molecule. To me, it's the frequency of unconditional love and truth. And in order so backing this up a little bit, when I was talking about endometriosis, when we don't have enough copper to be, and retinol, like saturated fat from animal sources, is how copper gets loaded into the master antioxidant referred to as ceruloplasmin. And if that can't happen, estrogen becomes the backup plan. And the estrogen to me is the frequency of the maiden. She is like, yeah, that damsel, because in our follicular phase, up, so after we bleed up until ovulation, that's when we are, our estrogen levels are slowly, hopefully, rising. And that is our internal springtime. It's when we are full of life and potentiality and possibility. But the the where that can be taken to an extreme is that she jumps in and tries to rescue everyone else because she can't rescue herself. And so when we look at something like endometriosis, where estrogen is a proliferative hormone, so she builds that, that is her job. She is trying to build up the lining of the endometrium inside of the uterus.
Wow. So that's like she's doing something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. However, if she gets overwhelmed, like if the detox pathways are blocked up and you are left with a lot of estrogen in your body, or that energy, like where you can't control your power, the follicular phase, to me, the way to describe it is the art of containment.
Mm.
So this is the boundaries. Wow. And if you have no boundaries, what do you start doing? You start building everywhere else. And so that's where we get it in the breast tissue that ends up becoming breast cancers. This is where we start getting like endometriosis. Like you start to have proliferation everywhere inside of your system.
Wow, that is incredible. So how can we come back to balance with this? Is it as simple as, I mean, I'm guessing there's a lot of spiritual work, but in terms of physicality, eating more copper, can you eat? I'm guessing you can eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is in high concentrations in organ meats, in seafoods. Oysters have tons of copper in them. Beef liver has tons of copper in it. Shiitake mushrooms, chocolate actually has a lot of copper in it.
Oh, I'm fine then, because I'm vegetarian, but I'm obviously getting that from
but we actually need way more than what it is that we think that we need. Mm-hmm. And even the RDA here in the United States has lowered it.
Oh, well, without going too much into conspiracy, I wonder why.
This starts to become like, and anybody with dark hair or more melanation in their skin, their copper needs are 6 times more than any fair-skinned individual.
Whoa. So how can we just supplement? Is that...
No. Unfortunately not. So this is part of it. Like when we look at this, like the deeper levels of self-love and how are we nourishing ourselves? Mm-hmm. Like, are we looking for quick fixes? Are you looking for just a supplement to take? One of the things that we have really no choice but to supplement is like magnesium.
Yeah.
And magnesium is very important in this entire dynamic. Like the three main players are magnesium, which to me is the acceptance of what is, because whenever we experience stress, endogenous stress, so like inside of the body, or like external stress that then our body like reads as stressful events, the first thing to be burned up is magnesium.
Oh, wow.
Because that's what powers our entire cell. And if we don't have enough magnesium, then we can't carry copper across the electron transport chain to create more energy. And so what happens is exhaust builds up, and iron and oxygen together create oxidative stress. It is the source of all aging inside of our body and on this planet. And we see this because we have rust in the outside world.
Yeah. And so is vitamin C, does that play a role in this as well?
Completely. Vitamin C and whole food vitamin C. You know what's at the nucleus of whole food vitamin C?
No.
Copper.
Oh.
And so what's been pushed on us a lot is ascorbic acid. And ascorbic acid is like the shotgun shell. It's not complete. It doesn't have the copper in the middle.
Wow. All of this in my mind is connecting the dots to the way I believe the world is, without going too deep into that, in terms of the masculine, let's say, for example, the do, the fear base, like not good enough, sleep when I'm dead and all of that. And we're just burning ourselves out. and the power of the feminine, as you know, the sexual essence of the feminine is our true power, which is why we were burnt at the stake so many years ago, because people are scared of how powerful we are. All of it's just like making so much sense to me.
Isn't it? It starts to become this like, oh my God, what did I open?
I love it.
Especially when we start to recognize our cyclical nature. Because when I work a lot with individuals, what I'm trying to rest into, because the manifestation of any type of disease is a metabolic issue that starts on the mitochondrial level. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it, pretty much all of it, is because we don't live in a state of reverence for our cyclical nature in a feminine body. And we are so afraid of death in this life that we run at all costs from it, because we are so afraid of the fire of transformation.
I'm recognizing a post that I saw on your wall, and I actually want to reshare it. I love it. It's like a picture of like a being that is in pain and they want transformation. And then you've said on the left something like slow and steady or healing. Okay. And then they're like, oh no, I wanted like an instant get me out of pain card, like just yesterday. And that's not how it works. how can I get more copper instead of just supplementing, which clearly we can't do? How can we do that?
Yeah. This becomes part of the really challenging dance of this existence, is that in the deep reverence of honoring the things that we were gifted to consume on this planet, there's no way around it that we have to eat animals in some way, shape, or form, because the highest forms of copper, like the most copper dense and nutrient dense, mineral dense things that we find, come from animals. And not only that, it's the nose to tail consumption of them, much like our ancestors did, that lived in deep, deep reverence with the earth. Mm. And the responsibility that comes in the deeper honoring of these divine creatures that we've been gifted. And like seafood is really big. There is a part too that when I'm working with individuals that I enter in also, is the reflection of whatever an individual's blood type is too, because there's so much bio-individuality in this. Yeah. And I do think that there's really, really deep wisdom in the blood type that we manifested and what minerals are being requested of our body.
How do we find out what blood type we are? I have no freaking idea.
You can do if you do a blood donation, usually they'll tell you, or if you can talk to whatever practitioner that you have and do a blood test and see if they can type you in some way or shape or form. I knew it because when I turned 18, I started doing blood donations, which is, it's so fascinating the places that our intuition, our instincts guide us, because I was experiencing such heavy menstrual cycles. And part of my story too is, in my youth, I had really what people would have referred to as really bad allergies, but I experienced gushing bloody noses. And this is your body's very wise way of offloading excess iron. Because if that iron doesn't have a place to go and it can't be recycled inside of your body, it gets stored in the tissues, because pathogens, bacteria, viruses, fungus feed off of iron. And so your body tries to protect you by storing it in the tissues when it doesn't have a place to go.
So that's why you was led unconsciously to give, like, get the blood out.
Yeah. And the only other way, like those of us who chose to come in female bodies, like we have a really beautiful way of at least attempting to offload some of that iron. Mm. But that's why I would up until about a year and a half ago, I was still experiencing menstrual cycles where I was losing a pint of blood a day.
Ouch.
For 5 or 7 days.
Is that like, because you were overloaded with iron? And I really want to get this question in before we don't, because I think it's so important. So many people I know go to the doctor because they're tired, and then the doctor says you're iron deficient, therefore you need to be on iron tablets. Anemic, that's the name for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah. Can people be anemic, do you think?
I've only met one person who I think actually qualifies as potentially being iron deficient anemic. What we're actually suffering from is an anemia of chronic inflammation, because the problem is that they're testing it in the blood, but they're not testing it in the tissue. Again, going back to these things like how iron gets chaperoned around the body, we need copper and we need saturated fat, we need the retinol. And you know, going back even further to when I was talking about like the way that our food's been fortified, when Eisenhower was president in the United States, when he experienced his first heart attack, they started demonizing all saturated fat sources. And wow. There was a huge push for heart, quote unquote, heart healthy fats, so canola oil, vegetable oils, all of these seed oils. I mean, we can go down the funnel of like where the money was running there, but what started to be taken out of the kitchens were real butter.
I love real butter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Grass-fed, organic, real butter.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's an amazing source of retinol and okay. raw milk, like any of these things. And like, there's so many people that think that they're allergic to dairy or they can't handle dairy. And it's actually the pasteurization of the dairy or the way the cows were even raised too, and what they were fed.
Yeah. Like, it's not what you are, what you eat, and you are what you eats. Right. I mean, when we did eat meat, I mean, I say I'm a vegetarian, I don't like labels. I just don't really eat meat, neither does Valter. But when we did, and I can definitely look at this after having this conversation with you, we always used to go to the butcher who had organic grass-fed chickens, meat, like cows, everything. So they were just doing it as nature intended them to do. That was really important to me.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful. And like such an important thing to be looking at so that we're in more of a deep relationship with our sources, which goes back to like, again, everything being such a reflection, it goes back to the way that we move in relationship to everything.
Yeah. Yeah. To be grateful of, like, you know, I've read many spiritual books that say a simple acknowledgement and gratitude for the sacrifice of the animal you're about to eat, the intention of thank you for this meat, like thanking the animal for the sacrifice of itself, that can go a long way in terms of how your body then digests what you just eat. Right? I mean, maybe some of my listeners will be thinking, not really getting it, but the magic behind all of this is, just because we can't physically see something doesn't mean it's not true. It's like gravity. You can't see gravity or you can't see the wind, but it's there. It's happening. You go and switch a light switch on and then there's just light. Well, how the hell do you think the electric comes from somewhere to get, like, there's so much that we quote can't see, and we only believe it because we've grown up with that. But then I just invite you all to open, if I'm not judging you saying you're not open, but just to come into this conversation with, like, with such an open mind and an open heart, and just see what lands with you.
Yeah. And I think the important thing too, just to like anchor things back into my, I did a live with my girlfriend Nisia Nelson, who I quoted earlier. We did it on progesterone. It was about a year ago, and how progesterone holds the frequency of trust in the universe and trust in life. And in that conversation, she shared the quote that's served as the foundation of everything that I've really built my continued education and expanded my education on, that minerals control our enzymes and enzymes control our hormones and hormones control how we think and perceive and interact with the world around us. And, you know, similarly to what you're saying about, like, we can't see these things, like we can't see the minerals inside of our cells that are the actual spark plugs of life, but they're there. And this is where we start to build a different relationship with the way that we nourish ourselves and the way that we are in relationship with our body. When we start to understand that what's happening in our internal system is literally coloring the way that we view the world. Like, and going back to what we were talking about, how copper colors everything in the world. Like, it is the actual, it's what provides pigmentation. The way that we view, like, when we're talking about these eating disorders, like, there was such a, I still experience this sometimes where I have to be like, okay, what lens are you truly seeing this through? That, like, I thought I was so huge. And what that was my body, like, I was so under mineralized also. And the way that I couldn't see clearly. And retinol, going back to saturated fat, retinol is what our eyes need. Like, it is being, it takes sunlight, and retinol is what, like, is then what helps convert the sunlight into energy. Mm-hmm. And are we actually open to being penetrated by the sun, or are we hiding from it? We're right. Going back to what we were talking about, the penetration that you've received from the masculine to allow your own deeper relationship with opening and receivership. Mm-hmm. Like, what's our relationship with the sun? What's our relationship with being able to see anything in life?
Wow, that's so interesting, because my eyesight over the years, and I'm 35, I'm not old by any means, but I didn't realize that my eyesight was going until 5 years ago. I had an eye test and she was like, yeah, you're illegal to drive without glasses. And I was like, what? And then when I had my prescription, I put my glasses on and I was like, whoa, the world is like in 3D, like I can actually see clearly. But then that kind of saddened me a little bit, because even now, like when I go to the cinema, for example, I have to take my glasses, and it kind of is a bit like, I'm a bit sad that my eyes are doing that. So do you believe that that can be healed?
Oh, I know that it can be, because of myself. That's, I recorded a podcast interview with an individual that I went through the root cause protocol practitioner training with, and he was an optometrist. And when I was in elementary school, I was diagnosed with something that they would call scotopic sensitivity. So I'm actually, this is so amazing now, talking through this as I go through my own gnosis of that's unfolding, is that, you have a challenging time with certain colors, and like black lettering on a white background became really hard for me to read. It's like a form of dyslexia. So the words would jump around and like change, but I was clearly incredibly retinol deficient, because that was... Retinol is what is also needed to help satiate your nervous system. And if you are in a heightened state of fear and your nervous system is stuck and locked, then your eyes aren't going to be tracking things together. It's going to turn off one of them, because your body's like, I don't have enough energy for this. Like, I'm only going to like track things through one eye. And this is where our eyesight might slowly start to decline, or we think that it can decline. Vic, the older that I get, the better my eyesight becomes. And part of this entire story that we didn't even get to is like when I started going through my health crises, like in 2019, the beginning of the year, I was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And the year leading up to that, I mean, I was just constantly sick. I was in and out of the hospital at different points in time. I was passing blood clots the size of softballs when I was having my menstrual cycle. Wow.
Yeah.
Like it was intense. And I was I mean, it was getting to the point that my body was like, girl, are you finally going to listen? And 2019 is the year that really rocked me. And my body was like, we're done. Like, either
bitch, listen.
Either we start to clean this up or you're going to die. And I really did think that I was going to. And I was in the most physically, verbally, mentally, emotionally abusive relationship I'd ever been in, other than the one with myself, mm-hmm. with an individual who was an addict. And this going back to what I was talking about before also is that it was so easy to be in relationship with him and just be like, oh no, you have the problem. I don't have the problem. I started healing from my eating disorder years ago. I don't have a problem at all. I was such a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, and this, I did a call with a clarity coach who called me out on all of it, because I felt so lost at that point in time and I didn't know what I was going to do next. I was experiencing debilitating anxiety attacks for the first time in my life. And it was a 2-hour phone call that forever changed the trajectory of my life. And she said, girl, you're addicted to chaos and you're addicted to challenge. And I cannot work with you until you walk through a 12-step program. And that was the biggest medicine that I had ever received, was like the invitation to finally take responsibility and to be a active participant in life, mm. a responsible active participant in life. And, mm. and so that was, you know, we have to, this can be really triggering for people to see, but we have to understand the places that we are enabling others, where we're self-sacrificing. Like, that's that endometriosis. Like, she's the self-martyr. Like, she tries to jump in and rescue and save everyone else.
And forgetting about herself completely.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So how did you heal your relationship with your body in terms of how you saw yourself? So obviously everything is interlinked, like physically, emotionally, hormonally, like minerals, all of it's linked, isn't it? Of course. But when you say, like, obviously when you was bulimic, you'd look in the mirror and be, I'm guessing, unhappy with what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
How did that start to shift for you?
It's a continued journey daily. And it's a continued, like, yeah, level of devotion. And there hasn't been like just one thing that like finally made it okay, like that gave me permission to finally like myself. It was a permission that I had to find through a lot of little ways. But the remineralization of my body has helped provide, like, again, going back to the way that I see the world, mm-hmm. the way that I see myself has changed and continues to change on such a deep level that I'm finally like, exhale. Mm. Yes.
Relax, see the eyes through love and see the love that you actually already are, and your body is perfect as it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's beautiful. How can we, I have so many questions. I'm looking at my We've got 10 minutes. I've literally got so many questions. I'm trying to direct myself and where I want to go with this. Let me stay in concepts of the food for now, with the copper, the iron that we don't need as much of, and the retinol. Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm.
What are some tangible things that people listening can be like, right, and also me, I want to make sure my body's getting enough of this. Obviously, we can work with you and I want you to share that at the end.
Yeah.
What can we eat, drink, do to make sure we're providing ourselves with all of the things that you've talked about?
Yeah. Where I would also direct people is the Root Cause Protocol has a free handbook that's available on their website. And it's the website is rcp123.org. And that's where you can download it. And one of the really important things is there's an entire list of stops. And because we need to know what we're possibly doing that's blowing up copper inside mm-hmm. of our body, or not even allowing the opportunity for copper to be able to exist as it should.
Yeah.
And so starting there is a really important step, because we need to be able to open and clear and clean to be able to accept in some of these things that then help us begin to start to re-nourish our entire system.
Yeah. And what are your favorite go-tos to eat? Because you eat a lot of beef jerky, right?
No, well, hold on. And then the next step then is like, we need to address how our adrenals and our kidneys are functioning. So we support that with a thing called an adrenal cocktail. And we need to provide our system with proper sodium and potassium levels and whole food vitamin C. So we do a concoction of a potassium source. I prefer cream of tartar. Some people really enjoy using coconut water, and then a salt source, one that isn't pink, because pink salt contains large amounts of iron. It's pink for that reason, because iron is red. And yeah,
so interesting. Is it, what am I even trying to say?
The Himalayan pink
salt. That's what I'm trying to say. Have that.
No, it's full of iron. There's much better salt options that exist. This is too, like, starting to see like the pervasiveness of where iron exists, where fear exists, and like the way that we're intaking more fear into our systems. Mm-hmm. And not to like create more food fear, like there's always a good, better, best like approach. And it's finding where you are right now and like the little changes that you're able to make like there. Yeah. Like we have to be human. Yeah. Here too. And some things are just unavoidable at some point in time. But okay, so we do a clean salt source, and then we do 4 ounces of fresh squeezed orange juice or some other kind of like vitamin C. Like there's a really brilliant individual named his handle on Instagram is Georgie's Garden, and he talks a lot about seasonality of food and like consuming stuff that is in season, like carbohydrates, like that's in season. But also like, we just need to, you know, if your body's craving something, there's a deeper reason why too. Like this is, I like to say, like, once we know the rules of the game, we can know how to break some of the rules. Yeah. So by supporting our adrenals, then we can start to get ourselves, you know, more on track with creating energy. And then it's like adding in magnesium. So we like to start transdermally first, like preferably. So lots of magnesium baths. I love like Dead Sea salts because they contain quite a few different minerals in it. The most common thing that I feel like people know are like Epsom salts, which is a form of magnesium. It's not my preferred one. I would choose like a magnesium chloride would be a better option. And then like good, better, best. So Epsom salts, magnesium chloride, or like the ancient Dead Sea salts. And you can also do like magnesium sprays or magnesium oils on your body. And then doing like an oral form of magnesium. Those are like really simple, good places to start. And then organ meats are some of the highest, like contain the highest concentrations of minerals. So if people aren't quite ready to introduce things like beef liver or kidney or any of that into their diet yet, there's desiccated like tablets, that supplements that do exist that can be beneficial too.
Wow. My fiance has magnesium spray.
Awesome.
He said it burns his skin a little bit. I mean, I should probably try it. I do take a oral supplementation, but
yeah, it can do that. If that happens, I suggest putting it on the bottoms of the feet and then putting like socks on, because the feet are really porous and help like pull stuff in.
Wow. Oh my gosh. All of this is insanely interesting. Okay. Last question before we go into how people can work with you. Let's talk menstrual cycles. should or shouldn't we? I don't even know why I'm using that word, because I don't like the word should or shouldn't. But is it normal, let me rephrase the question, to have pain during your menstrual cycle?
Pain is always a messenger.
Yeah, because we've been taught that it's an inconvenience, it's annoying.
Oh gosh. The things that we've been taught about our menstrual cycle is insane. Sort of what I was speaking to before, you know, about progesterone, the luteal phase. So after we ovulate is the time when progesterone is the highest. And we've pathologized the luteal phase as this period of time of PMS. And this like ragey woman, the woman with like, who's out of control. And, you know, that's not how we're supposed to be. That's a sign of like elevated estrogen levels, or even in relationship to the progesterone levels. What our luteal phase is really supposed to be is this time of differentiation. Like within a cell, like that's part of the cycle. Like it's this period of time where you are clearing out what doesn't serve you. And there is a truth and a trust in that existence. And our menstrual cycles, like, I feel like this can be received in a triggering manner, the way that we are intended to give birth, the way that we are intended to be in relationship with our menstrual cycles are both intended to be euphoric.
I've heard
pleasure,
that
yeah, pleasure is our birthright.
Yeah.
There is no reason that these things are supposed to be painful. And when we are experiencing pain, it gives us the opportunity to look through the lens of curiosity, see you, copper, and really see what is asking to be released or looked at further. For I find that a lot of women experience the luteal phase specifically in a really like agitated way, because they're allowing their boundaries to be crossed at other points in time in their cycle. And this is like, also, are you actually allowing yourself to rest? Are you actually allowing yourself to slow down at different points in time? Are you actually inviting in and welcoming in nourishment? And the more that I walk this path, the less pain that I have. Like my cycles come and I'm like, I'm excited. I'm excited for that opportunity to release. I don't have cramping at all anymore. I don't excessively bleed. I still fall into the category of managoria, I believe is how you say it, but the excessive bleeding, but like, I'm not losing a pint of blood at all. Like I'm keep getting closer and closer to quote unquote normal. And that to me is like a really good indicator of what's happening. My basal body temperature has risen, which tells me what's happening with my thyroid and my ability to then speak my truth out into the world. Like through this entire process, my basal body temperature has risen 2 degrees.
Whoa.
And every degree, like singular degree, has a 10% impact on our metabolism. And I'm not starving myself. Like I am eating, like, and not binge eating either. Like my relationship with food, my relationship with my body, my relationship with nourishment, my resources, like everything has shifted.
Wow, that is so beautiful. And everything, as you're describing it, you make it really easy to see that everything's connected. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, oh, this symptom is happening, therefore let's stop the symptom. There's so much more to that, because personally, with my menstrual cycle, I've been tracking for about a year and a half now. And the last 2 months or so was the first time I've experienced my menstrual cycle with zero pain. And I've welcomed it for about 8 to 10 months, like as in I welcome it like it's time to go inward, to release. I see it as like such a gift. And I used to hate my period. I use Natural Cycles app to track. I take my temperature every morning. We have sex when it's a green day, like all of that. We have no fake hormones that I take. And I've also, I don't know if you've experienced this, say if I'm going through something emotionally and I'm not wanting to let go, my next bleed is a bit longer and a little bit painful depending on what's going on in my emotional life.
Oh, completely. Well, the gift that we're offered to, like, into the way, like, we can get into the quantum and timelines and all of these things, is it takes 90 days for a follicle to mature. So anything that you are experiencing today is technically a gift from you 3 months ago. And what you do today is a gift to a version of yourself 3 months in the future.
Mm.
And so what you're releasing ever is a whole relationship of the previous 3 months. And like, you know, this is part of, like, when we can start to get out of the way of immediacy, like everything needing to be like, oh, this is because of this that happened like last week. Like there's a yes and, like, yes and, but we need to look bigger picture too, as to like where these things started stacking up. And like, yeah, I experienced like dark stagnant blood, like that tells us a lot about stagnancy in the body, like where we are keeping ourselves stagnant.
Wow,
like where, again, where we can't let go. I mean, like we people who have a lot of digestive issues, like I talk to people about this a lot, and a lot of it is like, where are you having issues digesting life? What are you afraid to digest in your life? What are you afraid to let go of in your life? What are you afraid to open yourself up to in this life?
Wow. Just the word wow. The word wow, amen. And the mic drop like thing.
Isn't it amazing? I'm constantly stuck in this state of just like, wow, God, wow.
Yes. I feel like a child most days. I mean, I'm mature, well, most of the time, but you know, the childlike wonder, like, you know, when you go outside and you're like, whoa, like, look at this, like, I have that, and I love that about me. And, you know, some people look at me a bit like, you're a bit weird, and I'm like, that's the biggest compliment you can give me, honey.
Oh, Paris, I love you.
I love you too.
That is part of the beauty of this entire, like, being able to ignite that childlike wonder that we can view the world through. And it's such a necessary piece of really, like, being able to let ourselves exist as we were truly created to be, which is in a state of curiosity and a state of wonder and a state of, like, being, you know, able to dance and able to sing and be in harmony, the harmonics of life, the way that, like, viewing the world through a lens of technicolor.
Love that. Oh, Paris, how can women come into your world? Like, how can you help them? Do you do one-to-one and group?
I do one-to-one work right now. Some things will be shifting in my business that'll allow for an opening of, like, more large group. So there's some things that will be coming down the line, as well as over the next couple months, I'll be doing some really beautiful partnerships with some people that I absolutely adore and love, and offering those workshops to people. But the place to find me the most is on Instagram, which is at, like, my handle is at Paris_Hodges, and it's Paris with two R's. And at the moment, that's the easiest way to be in contact with me. And there's going to be a lot more coming too.
Oh, I'm so excited. And I'll obviously link everything below for the queens that are listening. Thank you. I mean, I need a deeper word than thank you. Like, you have so much wisdom and so much knowledge and all the things. And I'm just so grateful to have shared this space with you. And thank you for providing so much wisdom to me and our listeners. You're a gift.
So are you, Vic. Thank you.
I love you.
I love you too.
And queens, I will see you in the next episode.
I hope this episode was everything you needed to hear today and more. If you love this podcast, then please screenshot this episode and share it to your Instagram or Facebook stories and tag me at Victoria Kleinsman so I can share you with my audience and we can get my podcast out to more women that need it. Also, I'd be super duper grateful if you could rate and review this podcast as it really does help others to find it. Thank you so, so much in advance, and I'll see you on the next one.